bear with me, working with others. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is a 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can't secure their confidence, and if this fail, remember they are very ill. Life will take on a new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a friendship grow up about you, to grow up about, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. All right, thanks a bunch, folks. That's the reading. Now we're going to have a Q&A. If you have any questions you want to ask, if you guys get 5 minutes apiece, and we'll take it from there once the questions are over. So raise those arms, ask the voice.
What's your idea of a higher power?
Yeah, so the question is,
when you think of a higher power, what comes to mind?
So the question is, what's your idea of a higher power? When you think of a higher power, what comes to mind? So, Matt?
Do you want me to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
Before I get into the specifics of what I understand to be a higher power, because I choose to call it God, is that, for me, what's important, from over his nonsense and from the 12 steps, the most important thing about a higher power is that it's not me. It just can't be Josh. Because before, it was either Josh or food. It was one of the two. And I've heard so many different higher, and what's great about this program is it doesn't have to be God, it doesn't have to be anything, it has to be what you believe. It gets to be what you believe, and you get to choose to believe, however you understand your higher power. And I've heard some amazing higher powers in this program, like from a doorknob, because that's a greater power, to the ocean, to a meeting, to, I heard someone talk about an AA meeting. There was this train that was on the street, right? And it would go past all the bars without stopping. And he's like, well, that's my higher power, because it was able to, go straight without stopping. And for me, it's like you take that train, you put it on a street with a McDonald's, Carl's Jr., and an In-N-Out Burger, and that would be my higher power because it wouldn't stop. But for me, my higher power is God, and it is. And I don't, when I sit back and try to let in God and let in my higher power, I don't have a vision of what that is. It's really just the act and in the breathing and making that conscious contact. And it's different. It's like when I listen to my head, it's like 100 miles per hour. But when I listen to my higher power, it's a lot more gentle and it's a lot more subtle. And I have to actually really seek it and listen for it. And it doesn't always come, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. It's not always, like right when I want it. And, my dad always says something that I, love, in program that I, always love, which is, God has three answers for us. And it's yes. Yes, but not now. And no, I have something better for you. And I found that to be true. And there have been so many times where it's like I would have been selling myself way short had I gotten what I wanted, originally. But God really did have something, better in store for me, but I didn't necessarily see it, and maybe it took years, before it was revealed. Do you have something you wanted to say on that?
I'm a compulsive reader.
I think my sponsor had me go through We Agnostics and had me underline every concept of God that was in that entire chapter. So even if it says God as we understood him, that was a concept. Czar of the heavens, that's a concept. The one that really spoke to me was, it said we found the great reality deep down within us. Because my whole thing is like, when you're new in program, it's not about trusting yourself. It's about surrendering, But for me, part of my recovery has really had to be about learning to trust a power greater than myself. and that it's not going to be in everyone's opinion, but that maybe that great reality is deep down within me. It's taken me 7 years to have to shift my idea of a higher power to something that lives inside me. But it says in step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. The care of God means I have to at least be willing to believe in a higher power that cares about me. And I always want to feel like that higher power is out there somewhere. Like even if I don't believe it's in a person or a thing, I'm always trying to connect to something bigger than myself, as if it's not, as if it's out there. Like the energy of what God is was outside of me. But like, for me, it's about how can I most quickly connect to God? How can I most quickly connect to a higher power? Which means maybe I need to stop trying to, like, even when I pray, I'll be praying as if it's out there. Versus maybe praying and, like, praying, like, inwardly. Because then it's with me. It's with me, like, it's in my breathing, it's in my thoughts. Somebody told me when I was, like, breathe in God, exhale the negative. Breathe in God, exhale the negative. And that's been really helpful. And then it's like, even with, I had a work decision about whether I was going to call my boss and do something. And I was like, well, should I do this or do that? And I was like, both of those ideas were not working. I was still talking to my fellow. I was like, well, I could do da 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 da. And she goes, how does that feel? And I was like, I don't know. She goes, does it feel light? I was like, what do you mean, does it feel light? She goes, when you say that, the idea of that being your decision, does that decision feel light to you? Or does it feel heavy? I was like, no, it feels light. She goes, light is right. That's my higher power. And it was a compromise between both of my original ideas. God for me is also in the waiting. Like right now, I feel like, why is my career not where it's supposed to be? I'm doing all this footwork, or like my relationship, I got a divorce, and like this isn't right, and this isn't right, and this isn't right. And I'm doing all the work, but I feel like, God, like my life is just not coming together the way I want it to. But like in time with program, there is this space that's created somewhere inside me that just says, like, be still. You know, like, be still and know that I'm God. Like, just sit with it. Being uncomfortable doesn't mean that God's not working with you. It just means he's just not working as fast as you want him to work. You know? And I think also it's just experience. No one can give you your concept of God. You have to experience it. You know? Okay.
Thank you. Briefly, before we go on, I forgot about the seventh tradition, so what I'm going to do, we're self-supporting for contributions, is pass this around, and whatever you're able to give, let me just put it down there. While we're doing that, let's keep going with the Q&A.
And a couple people did send me already back here.
Oh, okay, yeah, we have literature for sale. You want to buy some, please take it.
What is it, a $5 suggested donation?
Yeah, that eclipsed me. $5 suggested donation will be appreciated. Okay, next question.
When a character defect comes up, how do you guys deal with it?
The question is, when a character defect comes up, how do we deal with it?
Let me go first. I call my sponsor. I think it really first is like really being able to like acknowledge that like you're acting on it. I get such a relief out of being honest now. Like it takes away so much of the weight of feeling like I've got to carry it and that I have to fix it. The act of me like reaching out to someone else and being like, say, hey, like I did this. It takes that burden off of me that feels like I have to fix it myself. And usually it just involves like doing some step work, or like if it's an incident that happened, like writing out the step work and then, you know, what is my part? And usually by that time you kind of know what kind of amends you need to make, if any. But I don't want to acknowledge that I have character defects. And I certainly don't want to acknowledge that I can't get rid of it alone. I want to be able to do it all myself. So I think it is, it for me, it does start with calling my sponsor. And you know what's really healing for me is when I can be in a meeting and I can be really, really honest. And I'm like, yo, I did this thing today and it was so bad. You know? Like, I called my girlfriend her mother. We got in this really bad fight and I called her her mom. And she did not have a good relationship with her mother. And it really hurt her. Like, I did a really, really bad, bad thing. And I did what I could to make amends. But I was still feeling so much shame and guilt about it. But I had to go to, I needed to go to a meeting and be like, look, I'm in recovery and this is what I did. And it was really bad. And I just knew that someone else is probably screwing up too and doing the same thing. And so I felt like, well, maybe it's helping them too. Because as long as I don't meet over it and I do the footwork to amend, then, you know, I'm changing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for me, it's got to be spiritual. It's got to be the spiritual solution. And I love that in the seventh step, we literally have the seventh step prayer. And it's amazing. And I remember in the beginning when I was, like, formally working step six and seven, that I would literally, you know, have the list of defects of character and I'd read through them. And then I would, you know, go take out my big book, and even though I had it memorized, I'd like read it. Like I'd read my creator, you know, and I would read it. And something that started for me in like the last year and a half or so is I started doing, and I'll share this on the podcast with you guys because I found it really, really great for me in terms of connecting with my higher powers. I started praying over the phone with my sponsor and with my sponsees. It started with my sponsor, and now I do it with all my sponsees. And I'll, you know, usually just close the literally phone call, like it's a meeting, with prayer. And it's usually one of, you know, either serenity, third step, or the seventh step. And it was funny because yesterday, I had this whole joke with my sponsee this week. We'd do all three, and we were like calling it, he called it the trifecta, and we like had this whole joke, you know, about doing the trifecta with these three prayers. It's like you memorize three simple prayers, and you just like, you know, stick to it, and you do it, and it's like amazing, you know, the burden lifted in doing that. And what's really cool is like I'll be able to have like this spiritual experience, like, you know, while on the phone, and like even if I don't get through to them, and I'm leaving a message, I'll leave a prayer on their voicemail, right? Just like, you know, I'd leave the food or, you know, or whatever else is going on and all the, you know, all the shit, but I'll say that, okay, I'm going to close with the training prayer. And then I'll get the messages back from sponsees or from my sponsor where they leave the third step prayer or whatever. And then when I'm listening to it, I'm saying it with them, you know, again. And, like, when we're talking, like, we're saying it together over the phone. And I think, I guess part of where I got inspired to do it was like calling into phone meetings, and on the phone meetings they'll do it. And just for whatever reason, it's been something for me that's like, I'm already making those calls and taking those calls, and it's just something that I do and make a lot of calls that really helps me to get out of my head, and to like have that where it's like I'm forced to have the spiritual part of the phone call, you know, aside from just the phone call itself, and actually have the prayer has really made a big difference for me, because it's like, when I'm getting into my selfishness, you know, because that's a big one, you know, for me, or even also on the other side, getting into my people-pleasing, you know, and on the other side, you know, I don't see it, and it's like I have to, you know, humbly, you know, ask my higher power, you know, to remove that stuff, and I forget all the time, and that's why I have to call my sponsor, so that I can be reminded, and that's why I have to share my experience, which is, you know, working through that stuff. Because if I don't, then I don't have that experience. You know, if I'm not working through it.
What is your process or routine of meditation? And have you ever had difficulty just pausing and just being with yourself? Has it ever been harder to be with yourself than with others?
So what's your process or routine with meditation? And have you had any experience with, like, having a really hard time being with yourself? And has it been harder at certain times than others? You know, for me, it was like what Matt just talked about with the let God and then let out the negative, right? That was what he said. Early on in program, like a year, you know, like less than a year in, I had to find a home meeting, at my college, where I was, you know, literally 7 months into program, they made me secretary because there weren't that many people with recovery. It was different, you know, an hour east of here than it is, you know, here. But in terms of the amount of recovery. The meeting that I went to was on Tuesday nights at 5 o'clock, which I think is still going, and it was a meditation meeting.
And I learned a lot about meditation from that, because it was like really early on and we were, you know, doing it. And it was amazing meeting, because what they would do is they would read the same like thing before the meditation. They would read some stuff out of the other stuff, and then they would have this whole like reading of, you know, like all this stuff to like get you relaxed. And then there would be like a timed, like I want to say it was like 10 minutes, like 10 or 15 minutes like straight of like meditation. And it was like you were forced to sit there and like, you know, deal with your shit, or, you know, get spiritual, you know, like whatever it was that was going on. And I remember one of the big things in there was let God, like on the inhale, and let go on the exhale. And that for me has been a huge, you know, part of my, you know, meditation routine in terms of like when there's the chatter. Because like there's still, the chatter is still going to come, is always going to show up. You know, it's showing up throughout my day, and it's still going to sometimes show up throughout the meditation. You know, it's not going to always be this like, oh, you know, perfect spiritual, you know, life. And it's not like that, like all the time. Like I'm not, you know, there spiritually. But when I, you know, take those, you know, minutes and just like to just like let it go, like I'll also like incorporate doing, you know, some of the, you know, said prayers that I was talking about that I do on the phone. Like I'll do those like internally, like I'll, you know, sit there and try to do it, and just like stuff to just try to get, you know, out of my own head. And I was really lucky, because early on in the program I heard a guy speak and he had what I wanted. And I called him and he said, well, you know, let me tell you my daily routine. He went through all these things. He said, and I, you know, meditate every day. And it was like early on that, like, you know, I started doing it. And I, you know, one of the things that's great, you know, not to plug my home meeting again, is that we do a 1 minute time meditation every week. And that's nice that, you know, it's not that long, but it's like nice that they did that. And that was something new that they had started doing in the last few years. It's, you know, always nice to just, you know, take that time. Like even if it's hard to do, it's like even more important. It's like we make the phone calls and program when things are bad. I mean, when things are good, like we make the outreach calls so that when things are bad, we're still making those calls. We don't have to turn the food. Mm-hmm. And it's like we can still meditate even when things are like really shitty and like we can't, you know, sit still. Because we're doing it, you know, when things are easier, you know, and we're able to do it, like, and we're able to, you know, do that. So,
I think for me, like, first of all, you talk about being able to sit by yourself. It's extremely hard to like sit by yourself, you know, and I couldn't meditate for a really long time. Like, I had worked through the steps and still just couldn't sit down and do any meditation. And then it's like, I can even read the words that say, meditation can be anything, but still that's not good enough. Like, I'm just never doing it right. And I think, like, when I went through a period where I just couldn't meditate, I really had to allow. Like, okay, I can't meditate right now. I can't meditate right now. Like, that's just, it's just not where I'm at. I can't do it. If I were to sit and be like, beating myself up about like, you can't meditate, that's the shit that will take me back to the food. So I think for me, meditation is about learning to allow. Like, you know, prayer is talking to God, meditation is listening to God. And, you know, someone told me that like, when you call another fellow and you ask them how they're doing, the time that's spent you not thinking about you is meditation. What my routine looks like now after years, you know, I'm outside help and all this stuff, like everybody's been like, do you meditate? I mean, from a therapeutic standpoint, like from a doctor's standpoint, they're like, do you meditate? So like there's just health benefits to the act of meditation. And I found like in the AA 12 and 12, the 11th step prayer. You know, Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. The whole idea is about being present enough in your day to realize I am exhibiting doubt or I am causing injury. Okay, what is the opposite of that? It is faith. I'm experiencing doubt. Let me have faith. It's about being slightly separate from yourself so you can recognize when you're acting out and when you're not. So for me, meditation is simply just being quiet, hearing all the stuff that's in my head, and just letting it be there. I'm not trying to stop it. I'm always trying to stop stuff and stop this and stop everything. Or maybe I just allow it to be there. But you get to find what works for you. I found guided meditation works good for me. I can't sit down and quiet my own mind down. A guided meditation that you can get on YouTube or anywhere has worked really well for me. Because then it guides me through it. And then when I'm done, I'm done. Yeah. Any other questions?
Can you talk about your spiritual awakening and tell you that you had one, and was it sudden or more efficacious one?
My first spiritual awakening was after I had gone home to make amends to my family. And it was the first time that I really had the experience of being fully self-supporting, where I paid for my own plane ticket, I paid for my rental car, I decided to stay with my grandparents instead of my family, and I had a really tumultuous relationship with all of them. And I went home and I made amends, and I couldn't find my older brother at all while I was home. And when I found him, he was, you know, working at the airport, and I found him almost like an hour and a half or so before I was supposed to leave on my flight, and I couldn't find him at all the entire time. And he was going to meet with me just to say hi or whatever, and he was coked out of his mind and was hardly present. But I had made my amends to everyone else, and I made my amends to him too. And I just read this letter to him. I read the letter, and I didn't let any of my family members keep the letter that I read. But I let him keep it because I just knew he needed to keep it. Then I got on my plane, and I'm flying back. And we got to the part where we're flying over the Grand Canyon. And like, it was just so beautiful. And for the first time, like, the words, something shifted in my own thinking towards myself. Where finally there's a part of me that was telling myself that I did good. And what it was like, you did good, Matt. Like, you did good. And for me, like, that was the start of what my spiritual awakening was. It was the awakening to that, like, I'm not all good, I'm not all bad, but to start to have start to connect to my higher power that was telling me that, like, I did good. That was the start of me, I think, like, really starting to, like, love myself. And it was the ninth step. It was willing to, like, work through all of that and to, like, just do it. And it's part of the nine-step promises. We will not regret the past nor shut the door on it. We'll comprehend the word serenity and we'll know peace. It's about getting present in your life, cleaning up the past so that we don't have to think about it all the time. And realize that we have tools to deal with our future so we don't need to worry about the future. That was the start of it for me, and it continues.
Well, and that just you sharing that brings up so much for me in terms of, like, that time and making those amends and doing that fourth step. I remember when I started my fourth step, and, you know, I was, you know, young when I came in, and my sponsor says to me, you know, first thing before you, you know, go, you know, you're going to write down resentments, all that stuff. First thing I want you to do is write down your deepest and darkest secret. And then I knew what step five was, that I was going to have to share it. Like, oh my God. And this was like something I hadn't talked to anybody about, you know? And something that I had so much shame around. And, you know, something that I thought that I was going to be so judged with. And I went, and we went through all the resentments, and I think we even started with the secret, and there was no judgment. There was just love. And that's all he gave me back. And he just listened. And he listened. And he listened to him. And, you know, it was an amazing experience. And then it was like, we started going through it, and it was like all these resentments that I had that, and by the way, like, when we were starting the fourth step, I was like, I don't have any resentment, so I'm not angry. And then, like, all this shit came out. the big spiritual awakening for me was the praying for the people and the things, you know, for the people that I had resentments for. And then having to make amends to some of these people that I had resentments over. Wishing for them
all the health and love and happiness that I would wish for my own family and for the people that I love. That was a real spiritual experience, because it was like really completely with no ulterior motives, but to, you know, to pray for someone that I, you know, had a resentment, you know, for. And to continue to do that. I was having resentment at work, and it was like I had to pray, you know, for this person, and I continue to. And it's amazing how much more I can be of service, and that this person is now, you know, of service to me when I, you know, get on, you know, that, you know, put it into that perspective and make it, you know, and try to let go of the resentment and pray for that person. It's amazing how much, you know, better it's gotten than when I had the resentment and I was right and blah, blah, blah. Because before our program, all I cared about was being right. I didn't really care about anything else. Like, it didn't, you know, it didn't matter as long as I was right. And now that doesn't necessarily matter. And I promise you that has, you know, been, you know, the reason that I'm, you know, still in a healthy, you know, marriage today is because I don't necessarily care about being right. And I can connect with her on all three levels that I couldn't connect with anyone before, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. That I can connect with another person like that. I could not do that before program. I couldn't be intimate before I came into program. I didn't have the tools. I didn't have the ability to be Josh and to really let it down and let go of the barrier. And for me, it was so much easier to keep eating and keep on the weight than to have to actually deal with people. And the amends, it was like I had people on this amends list that I didn't think would even take my call. And it's like not only did they take my call, but they said I could go up there and travel and meet with them and, you know, and were really loving and, you know, accepted the amends. And it's like, you know, I didn't think it would, you know, go that way. And even if they don't go well, it also doesn't matter, because it's about cleaning up my side of the street. And I shared earlier about the experience I had, you know, recently, and like that kind of stuff happens all the time. So I won't keep going, but I could go with lots of stories about, you know, God and showing up and, you know, that kind of stuff and spiritual awakenings. Yeah.
You know, having had a spiritual awakening, spreading the word, so to speak, it's challenging because, you know, everything in social media is very fast, very quick, and very transparent, you know, and our program is a program of anonymity. So I was wondering if you have any advice or any ideas on how to spread the word about OA or in a more public way. Or even in a smaller setting without losing one's anonymity.
There's several different layers to the question is how do we what are ways that we carry the message?
Well, I'm very aware, because I've struggled with my obesity, I think, since day one.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very aware of childhood obesity and how that's a very public topic right now. And I look at these little kids, and I walked in today, and there was a little exercise class or something, and they're all little girls, little 6-7-year-olds in black leotards. And the first one by the door was quite heavy, you know. And how do we reach that? You know,
so the question is, how do we carry the message in a more public way without losing our anonymity
or
breaking tradition? So, it's kind of like a layered question, because I think you have one, you have the tradition question in relation to anonymity, and is anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, and all public forms of public forms of communication? And at World Service, like this is a big thing that we had to deal with, was social media considered a public means of communication? Well, quite frankly, that just depends on what setting you have your Facebook status on. Do you have your status set on that only people you're friends with can see your status, or do you have it set so that public, so that anyone can see what your status is? I mean, it's as simple as even little things like that. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because if it's private, then it's only your friend seeing it, then and you voice something, that's not breaking your that's not a public, that's your friend, even if you have 1,000 friends, that's your private social network. You understand? So it's really complicated in that sense.
Right.
But with young people, I mean, I'm the young person's co-chair at World Service. So I receive emails from teachers, parents, concerned adults about young people who are overweight. And the thing is they have to want the program. It's a program. We have to be old enough to be able to make decisions for yourself. So the real question is who really needs OA? Is it that child or is it the parent? She said, in the 12 and 12, it says, we don't simply carry the message, we are the message. And so I find, you know what, and we wait for the question. We wait for the question. When someone says, oh, how did you do it? Or what happened? Those are the opportunities we present that are presented to us. Because we're not here to change the world. We're just here to carry the message to those who want it. And we can do a lot of damage to OA if we're carrying the message to people who don't want it. Because we're not a club. You know, it's a spiritual way of life.
Yeah, and it's attraction, not promotion.
Right.
All that stuff, I mean, it just has to be, I think, like you said, and not breaking the traditions. And the 12 steps are great, and they're amazing, and they've saved my life. But the 12 traditions have in just as many ways, if not more ways, because the 12 traditions are the reasons that from 1936, I can't remember what was the year that AA started, till right now that's still going. It's because of the 12 traditions. That's what, you know, keeps us, you know, going. Trust me, with the personalities that we have in these 12-step programs, we need them. So the question is, how do we, you know, get the awareness so that people can be attracted and just know about it? It's especially tricky with young people for reasons that Matt was talking about. I remember, I think the last time Matt and I did a panel together, and the only other time, do you remember this? But we did For Robin at the hospital, the Children's Hospital,
yes,
on Sunset in Vermont. Probably, what was that, 5 years ago,
mm-hmm,
maybe? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Or 6 years ago. And it was for kids that were, you know, 12, 13 years old, that, you know, asked to come into this program, and then they learned about OA, and we did a panel with them for an hour, and then they came to Serenity Sunday the next morning, and I think they came the next week, and that was it. I don't know if they came after that, but it was amazing experience doing that. And they may not have stayed now, but they know about it now, and maybe in 5-10 years, if they, you know, need it, that they know about it and they might come back. But it's hard. It's a lot to comprehend for someone young. You know, it was a lot for me to comprehend at 19. And I think that had I asked about it at 14 or 15 or 16, I may not have been able to do it. I may have needed to do more research and, you know, do it on my own. You know, I don't know that I was ready. I was ready then, but I don't know that I would have been ready earlier. I don't know that I would have been ready later. You know, a lot of people that come in older that aren't ready yet, and it takes years and years to come back in. But, you know, ultimately it's like, well, all we can do is, you know, is do our own part and be of service and keep within the traditions. And when I, you know, meet people out there that I have a chance to, you know, share my experience with, I will. But I won't do it in, you know, a public way, you know, in breaking of the traditions. But I have no problem ever telling, you know, breaking my anonymity to someone individually, because if it can help them, you know, by me doing that, that's, you know, I'm happy to do that because it saves my butt, you know, if for no other reason. And I love that, like, I go to the movies now and, like, all the time I'll see people from program and we just sort of, you know, look at each other and it's like, we're doing this, you know, and it's like, you know, and that's what it, and, you know, oftentimes we'll say hi and so on, and it's just like, and my wife will be like, oh, how do you know them? Like, a mutual friend, or whatever. I mean, most of the time she'll be able to figure out, but she'll come to meetings sometimes, so she'll recognize people and so on, because she'll come to support me and give me a candle and so on, which is nice, but she doesn't always, and it's like, just a nice thing. But, you know, we're doing so much, and it's like, you know, and there's to be in LA, oh man, we have it good. to be in the birthplace of OA, where there's meetings in the morning, in the afternoon, at the lunch, and at night. And that's during the week, and then on the weekend, it's just like all the time. And then now with the telephone meetings, these telephone meetings are amazing. They're going on all the time. If you need a meeting, you can get a podcast or a telephone meeting from anywhere, at any point, or you can get a lifeline, or you can get the literature. And, you know, it's amazing, and it's attraction of them. So the people that want it and need it and are willing to go to any lengths, they're going to get the recovery that they need. And there is so much, you know, recovery out there now to get that is totally different from when I came in 11 years ago. And like, it's amazing. Yeah.
You know, and I also think that the 12 traditions are meant to safeguard OA as an organization, as a group, and the principles and the traditions also safeguard what the 12th step is really about, which in what Robin read in the big book, it's about winning the entire confidence of another compulsive overeater. Which means, like, it's the message of recovery, and it's about one person sitting down with another person and helping them. And, like, the 12 traditions keep us safeguarded from doing this. Like, we're going to save the world, and we're going to go out there and let, because it's just about me sitting down and sharing my experience with another compulsive overeater. Like, that's really, when you read the big book, like, that's how it can work. It's when I'm willing to give my time to one other person.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the most important realizations of the 12 step that I don't, that we've touched on yet today is that we don't graduate from OA.
Right.
And for me, that is the big realization, because it's like everything else I did in my life, like, I graduated from, you know, like when I, you know, did it. But with OA, like, there is, you know, there is no graduation. And thank God, you know, thank God that there isn't a graduation, and that I can just keep going and I can keep practicing these principles and all my affairs. And that, you know, was the, you know, the big wheels. It's like, not, you know, just like do it once. It's like you keep, you know, doing it. And my dad is another, if you've ever heard my dad share, he always says, you know, you can't stay clean today on yesterday's shower. And it's, you know, it's true. You know, it doesn't matter what I did before. It matters what I did today. And it's like, same thing with the food. Like, when I think about the fact that I've been abstaining from certain foods and from compulsively overeating for the last 11 years or for the last 2 weeks or yesterday, that makes me want to go out and eat. If I think about, you know, the fact that I have to do it tomorrow or possibly the rest of my life, or, you know, and I'll never be able to have, you know, dessert again, you know, or whatever, that makes me want to go out and eat. But if I focus on today, it feels like I can do it. You know, I have the tools today where I don't have to go out and eat, you know, and that doesn't, and I don't have to have that obsession. And yeah, sometimes it comes back and so on. But the difference is, I pick up the phone, I go to my higher power, and I don't have to act on it today if I focus on today. When I focus on yesterday, when I focus on tomorrow, I got no chance. Because I'm, you know, I'm living in, where am I going to be in 2 months? Well, you know, this is where I am today. I'm at a meeting from 2 to 4 that I wouldn't have usually been at on a Saturday. And it's a beautiful day. Mm-hmm. It is a beautiful day. And I'm really grateful for that. So thank you guys for making my Saturday so wonderful.
Anybody? There's
a question over there.
I think one of the characters that was mentioned was people pleasing, and one of mine besides people pleasing had a struggle with is codependency, and feeling like, do I know they always talk about sharing the program, but like is it appropriate to have boundaries and maybe not share it with certain people if you feel like they're not safe, you know what I'm saying, so I just wanted to, if you had any experience with that. Yeah, I mean, I think it's really easy to get enmeshed
in the whole idea of, I've had sponsees who leave, and it's no reflection on me or my recovery, but that's part of the learning process, is really being able to detach from someone else and let them have their own, realize they have their own higher power and their own experience. And even the process of learning how to detach from another person is something that you only learn by doing. As far as carrying the message, it really is, I mean, that's where, and this part of this, we're kind of stepping into Al-Anon stuff, which is really helpful, I think, especially for OAers, just because we're very much people pleasers, which very ties into codependency. But that's another thing, like, the rule, like, wait for the question. If they're not asking about OA, they may not want to hear about it. So it's better just to, you know, let it lie. Also, it's like we might think someone needs a program, but it's not our place to tell them if they need it or not. You know, and that's the stuff where we stop, we pause. Even that stuff, I'll call someone else, like, hey, is this appropriate for me to say this or do that with them? And usually in the middle of me asking the question, I'm like, yeah, I really shouldn't say anything. You know? I just think like the way I have, my behaviors around the food, I have to have the same behaviors with people and things. Call someone, take a moment, you know, weigh and measure what's going to be the outcome of this, you know?
Yeah, and since we're being recorded, I don't want to get into too much specifics, but I, you know, a family member who, it was really hard when I came into program, because this is someone that also, you know, has issues with food and wasn't doing the program. So it was like I had me and my dad who were now doing the program, and this person wasn't. And it's really hard because, like, what I want to do, you know, especially, you know, in the beginning was to, like, you know, help this person because I love them more than anyone, you know. And it was also hard for, I mean, it's my mom, so there's no way to explain, but I mean, it was really hard for her too, to like accept, you know, me going to program because so much of our relationship, was based on, you know, her being able to provide the food, you know, for me and me loving that so much. And then, you know, I stopped eating a lot of those foods, you know, and wasn't, you know, eating that anymore, and you know, we certainly worked through it, but there were certain things that I couldn't, you know, couldn't do. And I think the best thing that I learned from this program in terms of carrying the message for her and still doing is just to be an example. You know, be an example of the program, because she knows about it. She knows that I'm here, and it's like, you know, God's got her, you know, on her plan. And, you know, God's got me on my plan, and all I can do is carry the message and be an example. But I can't always get into the, you know, nitty gritty, you know, specifics with her about, you know, this stuff all the time, because it's not, you know, necessarily appropriate, you know? And that's hard, you know, for me, because it's like, I want more than anything to, you know, control and help her. It's like, but, you know, they had Owen on going for a while, I don't know if it's still going, but, you know, certainly Al-Anon, you know, helps to do with all this stuff, but it's really, really hard, and that's why it's so important that not just the, you know, the addicts get the help, but the families of the addicts, too. It's just as hard for it, and you're just as powerless. You know, I'm just as powerless over her as I am my own disease. You know, and that's really hard.
We'll wrap it up. I'm Robin. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Robin.
Can we please give ourselves a hand for showing up? It's great.